Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Mark Grossman, Director General of the Foreign Service and Director of Human Resources at the U.S. Department of State. And joining me in a conversation is another PwC partner, Patty Fisher. Patty?
Mark, please tell us about your responsibilities as the Director General of the Foreign Service and also as the Director of Human Resources at the State Department.
Well, Patty, it's one of those massive government titles where you think that the responsibilities must take pages and pages and pages. But the more I've thought about it, the more I believe that we can get what I am supposed to do down into a bumper sticker, a slightly larger bumper sticker, which is we are charged with getting the right people in the right place at the right time with the right skills to carry out the President and the Secretary's foreign policy. And I know I probably should have some complicated answer for you, but that's really it. That's our job. And everybody who works in the Bureau of Human Resources works to that goal. They may do different pieces of it, and they may see themselves to be more central or less central, but in the end, that's what everybody is supposed to do.
And how do they do that?
Well, we are responsible in the Bureau of Human Resources for everything from recruiting people to retiring them, for promoting them and sending them to the right place, getting them to the right training. Every single thing that has to do with human resources really is our responsibility. And while I don't pretend to be a human resources specialist by any stretch of the imagination, what I tell people who work in my bureau is I've been their customer for 25 years. And so I got some views. And I think that's actually been quite a good combination. But for example, whether we're trying to figure out new ways to recruit, new ways to retain people, new ways to honor people when they are promoted or when something happens to them, when we're dealing with the new issues in human resources of, you know, elder care and life care and all kinds of people's family situations, and then also trying to make sure that when people leave our service, they leave it with dignity and they leave it with someone who has said thank you to them for their service to the United States.
Recently, you participated in a conference on the future of American diplomacy sponsored by the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. And at that event, you remarked that leading and supporting America's diplomacy in the 21st century will not be the same task it was during the first 24 years of your career. I wonder if you could explain this change.
Sure. Well, I'd be glad to. And let me just take a minute to thank you very much for sponsoring that conference, because I thought it was very useful, certainly for me. When I packed my kind of record albums, and I don't think probably anybody who's listening to this remembers what a record album is, but when I packed my record albums to go to Pakistan in 1976, the foreign policy of the United States was about the Soviet Union, and that's what we did. And now it's not about the Soviet Union anymore. As we were talking about a little bit earlier, it's about a whole range of new subjects. And diplomacy is going to have to deal with the new subjects. It won't be just, as I said before, writing points to give to the Secretary of State for her to speak. It'll be about our having to act and do things on the ground. The other thing I would say is that we talked a little bit earlier about technology. Technology is also utterly changing the way that we do business. The internet, the rapidity of information, the amount of information that you have, trying to sift it to make sure that what you have is right. All those things, I think, are changing the way diplomats work and who they work with. And that would be my third point is, you know, when I started this business a long time ago, the number of non-governmental organizations that we were dealing with was a handful. And now there are hundreds. And that's what democracy is all about. And that's been a huge change. So the amount of interaction between official diplomats and non-governmental organizations, business people, journalists, all kinds of people who are involved now in foreign policy has just made a tremendous, tremendous difference to our lives. And I say, I want to be clear, I think that's a good thing and not a bad thing and is a wonderful reflection on our democracy.
Why are there so many more sectors involved?
Well, I think it goes back to the issues that we're dealing with. When this was just about the United States and the Soviet Union, we kind of had a monopoly on that deal. But when it's about trafficking in women and children or promoting democracy or sustainable development, well, we don't hold a lock on all the expertise or information in those areas. I mean, I would no more go out on a campaign in Turkey, for example, where I was the ambassador, to work on enhancing democracy without involving American NGOs, Turkish NGOs, these people who are in non-governmental organizations who know about democracy and know about their own countries. are vital now to our ability to get the job done.
Mark, a couple of years ago, the State Department commissioned a study on the war for talent. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about the findings in that study and what the State Department has done to address those findings?
The War for Talent study, I think, opened our eyes a very great deal to two things. One is that we were in competition with the rest of the marketplace in the United States for talent. Like we were talking about before, we used to think that we had a monopoly on all the people who wanted to participate in international affairs. That isn't true anymore, because if there are NGOs and other people who are working in the field now, they also need talent. So we're now in competition with people who want to be in international affairs, and we need to understand that. So that was eye-opener number one. Second eye-opening thing I felt anyway from this study was the intimate connection between our ability to recruit the right people and work that we are doing to retain the right people. And these things seem to me, anyway, to be completely connected. If we're not doing a good job in retention, the word gets out that we're not a very good employer. So we've tried very hard on both ends to see what we could do that's new. We're trying very hard to do a better job to reach out to a diverse and wider group of candidates for the Foreign Service in particular. We're doing a much better job, I think, trying to reach out for civil service employees by offering them more training during their careers. We want very much to use technology to help us deal with these exams and the other ways we bring in people into the Foreign Service. And then on retention, we are just kind of full bore trying to change the way that we hold on to people, and that means changing the way that we deal with their families, changing the way we deal with some of the more difficult things, the obstacles we put in people's way to work for the State Department. And if we can get on these things, I think we'll help ourselves. But we have just taken the war for talent as a theme for everything we do. Then the other piece inside of that was talent management. You've got to not only have a war for talent, but once you get the talent, you have to manage the talent in some sensible way. And we have real challenges in both areas.
What is talent management and how do you do it?
Well, we're now kind of feeling our way forward on this, but clearly what we need to do is recognize that people just don't come into the Foreign Service and pop out the other end, that something happens to them all through their careers, and it shouldn't be pinball. It should be some idea of what it is that assignments and training and family and more responsibility are hooked together. I think in the private sector, people talk about succession management, and we need to do a little bit more of that. Our life is a little bit harder because we're moving people constantly all over, so I don't think it would be as clean, perhaps, as in some other businesses, but we've got that challenge. The other thing is, in terms of talent management, is we need very much to kind of focus in, again, as we were talking in the last segment, about training. And the other thing that this study told us was that young people today, they want training, and we need to do a better job of that. So if we can put this package together, I think we'll be able not only, I think, to compete in the war for talent, but we'll also be able to do a lot better job in talent management.
Well, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a few minutes with more of the Business of Government Hour.